Thank you. Question, Senator Harper, then Senator
Dorgan. Okay, thanks.
Let me make sure I understand the surcharge. It's a 1% surcharge on all building fees throughout the state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Harper, there is currently a 1% surcharge on building permits in the Tri-County area that supports the Tri-County Service Center and the Tri-County Building Industry Service Board. The board is being abolished and was abolished under Senate Bill 906. The service center functions are within the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and in order to provide the statewide network of the region program, then that 1% surcharge, which is currently in place in the Tri-County area, will be extended statewide, and that is the source of the revenue for the regional staff.
And just like Senator Messerly, so my builders are going to be charged 1%. Mm-hmm. We only have one building department in all the counties in my district. How will the regional coordinator coordinate any better than is happening now? What are they going to get for their money?
Mr. Chair, I believe that will be for the department to report back at some point to advise how it does work. While each jurisdiction has a building codes division, you're probably aware that not every building code agency at the local level has each of the building code programs. That is, they are not necessarily providing all of the inspection services, for instance. They may do only the electrical and plumbing, but they don't do the mechanical. Things of that sort, and where the local jurisdiction does not provide that inspection program, the state must do so. So there is that nexus of communication and partnering that needs to take place, as in the view of the department.
Senator George.
I just wanted to clarify that funding was that 1% surcharge would be in fact expanded from Washington, Multnomah, Clackamas County statewide, and that the reason for that, the testimony that we heard, was that in fact that we believe that the savings will accrue to those people who are doing the construction due to the fact of delays that they've encountered in the past. This would hopefully be a very much more expedited process where everyone knew what the rules were going to be in place. Am I expressing that correctly? And therefore, the savings would come from eliminating delays and a process that might, in fact, be convoluted, or why not convoluted, but let's rephrase that. Well, maybe convoluted was a good word. Senator Dukes is giving me a smile. The issue, I think, would be that you would have everyone would understand what the rules are, and you would have a system throughout the state that would be uniform. And I believe that would, in fact, save money. That's my opinion.
Yes, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was there any discussion in your subcommittee relative to the success of the Tri-County standardization program? I understand that was primarily to speed up the processing, not to make the uniform or the standardization as part of the process. Was there any discussion about that? How the Tri-County program has worked?
Sure. Could I answer that?
Maybe Representative Hanson could help.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was discussion. There's 27 different code agencies in the Tri-County area. One of the victories that they got was being able to get universal form application permits for all 27 agencies. They've tried, and I think they've been very successful at getting uniform code interpretations. We've got a uniform building code statewide, but sometimes at the ground level, the interpretations are different, and that can create confusion for people that are working in multiple jurisdictions. Kind of industry consensus is that it's helped, it's made things work better, and smoothed some problems out.
Representative Butler, follow up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had thought all along that the standardization of the building codes and the adoption of the uniform specialty codes and their interpretations had been the mission and responsibility of this department, and all of a sudden we find out that they're not able to make it with this rather substantial budget that they've got. I represent a district which borders up against Nevada and Idaho, where every one of the building code issues, and the permits that are charged in the state of Oregon are at least triple and quadruple that of any of the states that surround me in eastern Oregon. And I just have to tell you that this is a real killer for my constituents in my district. It, because of Oregon's Little Davis Bacon on any public building, we already pay roughly 1.35%, 1.35 times per square foot of what it costs in Idaho to build the identical state structure. And because of that, I will continue to vote against any further enhancements to the fees for an agency who's obviously failed its mission with the already largest budget that they've got now. Thank you.
Ms. Brooklyn, would you like to come up and speak briefly? There's been some good discussion. If you want the bill to survive, you better be extremely eloquent.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the Ways and Means Committee, for the record, my name is Jared Broadfoot with PacWest Communications, here today representing the Oregon Building and Construction Trades Council and many other contractors associations. Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Butler, to answer your question, what this bill does is it takes a Tri-County Services Board concept, which has been absolutely very successful, and thank you, Representative Hansen, for mentioning that, and puts it statewide. And basically, the administrator of the Building Codes Division, Mark Long, testified in subcommittee that basically what this would do is would give them a proactive approach to the building codes and to be able to go out and say, this is how we're going to do things. This is how the jurisdictions in this region will work, essentially, so everyone will be on the same page.
What the hell do we pay those people the fees that they're getting already for if they're not proactive with the things they're supposed to be doing, Mr. Chair?
So, for example, in jurisdictions that don't have this outside the Tri-County area, when you have many jurisdictions, the jurisdictions oftentimes don't discuss among themselves or talk, and this is an opportunity for the agency to do that. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that may come up.
Yes, Senator Harper.
Yeah, I participated. It was 99, and we decided yesterday on the Tri-County. In fact, I was very supportive of that. The multiple agencies in the Tri-County area, I understand totally. What is the benefit to my builders in Klamath County, Lake County, Crook County, Harney, Malheur? Greg, you want in on this one? I have a building department. Why are you going to ask my builders to send more money to Salem?
They've
already got it worked out how building codes are interpreted in my county. What benefit is this going to be to me?
Mr. Co-Chair and Mr. Vice Chair Senator Harper, to answer your question, what this will do is, say you have a builder in your district who goes from one area to the next, and if you, in your case, if you only have one building department, what this is aimed at doing is communicating between the agencies and to allow the state building codes division to provide that oversight, to go in and say, like I said before, this is how things are going to be done. This is going to be a streamlined process. So there's no difference from one jurisdiction to the next. For example, if a contractor is working in one jurisdiction and happened to go and do a job in the other jurisdiction, he may have to deal with different standards or a different interpretation of the code. That's been one of the problems we've had from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, is different interpretations of what the state code actually means. So this will enable the state to say, no, this is the statewide interpretation, and the local jurisdictions can adhere to that and work with the state to make sure that they have a uniform interpretation. So, for instance, your builders and contractors will be able to know what's going on across the entire region.
What are those guys doing with the money today?
Why
are the Uniform Building Code Division and DCBS making these things uniform with the money we give them?
Mr. Co-Chair and Senator Harper, I don't feel I'm qualified to answer that on behalf of the department, but from our perspective, this is a concept that, like I said, once again, was in the Tri-County area, which that's what the monies went for there.
And
this will
keep your garbage in the Tri-County area and leave the rest of us alone.
That's inappropriate, Senator. Let's conduct ourselves a little more decorum. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think this bill has some constitutional problems, so we'll move on to perhaps a different bill at this point in time. Let's go to Senate Bill 360. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Switching bills and switching gears here. Senate Bill 360 requires the Department of Higher Education to establish a signature research center. Funding for the infrastructure and operations of this center is included in the budget bills for the Department of Higher Education. The center will be jointly operated by the University of Oregon and Oregon State University. Portland State University will serve as a program partner. The Signature Research Center is directed to focus on the development of multi-scale materials and devices that are based on nanotechnology and microtechnology. Its research programs are charged with developing and commercializing new technologies for product engineering and design. The overall mission of the initiative is to create high-wage jobs and quality economic development in the state. The bill also extends the sunset on the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development, which developed the Signature Research Center concept from 2006 to 2008. Your Education Subcommittee recommends that Senate Bill 360 be amended by the -4 amendments and reported out do pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Discussion. Greg Smith, excuse me, Representative Greg.
Thank you, Chair Schrader. Representative Morgan, I guess I need a little 101 on Senate Bill 360. At any point in time, were any other institutions of higher education part of the OCED bill?
No, they were. The OCED bill was directed at the University of Oregon, Oregon State University, and Portland State University.
Thank you.
Further question, discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Seeing none, we'll pass out Senate Bill 360 to the Senate floor with the do pass or the -4 amendments. Senate Bill 875, relating to prescription drugs. Senator Mee. Senate Bill 875 establishes the Oregon Prescription Drug Program within the Department of Administrative Services and appropriates $198,398 in general fund to cover startup costs. The program would seek to make prescription drugs available at the lowest possible cost to participants in the program by having a program administrator negotiate price discounts and rebates with prescription drug manufacturers. Eligible participants include those enrolled in Senior Prescription Drug Program, Public Employees Benefit Board, Oregon Health Sciences University, local governments, and residents of Oregon who are older than 54 years of age, have gross annual incomes that are not over 185% of federal poverty level, and have not been covered under any private prescription drug benefit program for the previous 6 months. The bill directs the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research to develop and recommend to the Department of Administrative Services a preferred drug list. The office must conduct public hearings and use evidence-based evaluations on the effectiveness of similar prescription drugs to develop the preferred drug list. The subcommittee requested that the office consider the cultural and genetic diversity of various populations who are treated with the pharmaceuticals when it develops a preferred drug list. The measure directs the Department of Administrative Services to report to appropriate legislative committees and the Emergency Board by September 30, 2004, on program implementation. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 875 be amended and reported out do pass as amended. Discussion. Senator Dukes.
Two things. One, the serious one, and that is that whoever is around listening or in the room involved with this, when they develop the list, I just want to say to be very, very careful, because there lately has been a tendency to want to go with low-cost drugs, even though in at least one instance there is accumulating evidence that going with the low-cost drugs runs us the risk of killing people. Mm-hmm. So please be very careful and understand that we don't give this kind of direction lightly. And the other one, Mr. Chair, is I want to know what 185% of poverty level is, because except for the fact that I have prescription drug coverage, I think this might be aimed at me. I might qualify in here.
Stay here much longer. I think it might indeed.
Age-wise, I'm there. Maybe there on income.
Further, good point, and I think that's well understood. Further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, we'll send Senate Bill 875A, related to prescription drugs, to the floor. Do pass recommendation to the Senate. Senate Bill 904, relating to dispute resolution commission. This bill has been a long time coming, perhaps, to us. Senate Bill 904 abolishes the Dispute Resolution Commission. The Department of Administrative Services will use existing commission funds to pay final agency costs. The duties associated with state mediation are transferred to the Hatfield School of Government at Portland State University. And the duties associated with community mediation are transferred to the University of Oregon School of Law. this is part and parcel because of a direction given to Ways and Means by the policy committee upstairs, judiciary, at least on the Senate side. I think they've worked something out with the Judiciary Committee on the House side. A new dispute resolution account is established. Funds are continuously appropriated to the Department of Revenue for distribution to the Department of Higher Education and to the Judicial Department. Other funds expenditure limitation is established for these departments. A corresponding amount of general fund in the Judicial Department is reduced to reflect this transfer of court dispute resolution costs. The provisions related to fund distribution and program responsibilities have a January 2, 2006 sunset to provide a review of the availability of revenues for ongoing support of these functions. The Capital Construction Bonding Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 904A be amended and reported out to pass as amended. Discussion. Objection. Seeing none, Senate Bill 904A relating to dispute resolution do pass out to the Senate. House Bill 2511 relating to Department of Human Services.
Got it.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. I appreciate you pinching. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2511, as amended, identifies three main groups who are eligible for the Oregon Health Plan and describes the health benefits these groups may receive and the benefits these groups must receive. The three primary groups eligible for the Oregon Health Plan are, one, those who are categorically eligible because they are eligible for other social service programs, as well as pregnant women with incomes up to 185% of the federal poverty level, and children in households with incomes up to 200% of the federal poverty level. Two, the standard population, those adults with Medicare coverage with incomes up to 100% of the federal poverty level. And three, the medically needy, those persons above age 65 or blind or disabled as defined by statute with gross incomes not exceeding the standard established by the Department of Human Services and who are not covered by any public or private prescription drug benefit program. The bill describes both the optional and mandatory services for each group. For example, the categorical group may receive all health services. They must receive those services required by federal law, as well as physician, ambulance, laboratory, x-ray, and mental health and chemical dependency services, medical supplies, and prescription drugs. The measure states that in the event of insufficient resources, the populations of eligible persons receiving health services may not be reduced below the population of eligible persons approved and funded in the legislatively adopted budget for the Department of Human Services. If, however, House Bill 2152, the primary revenue bill, does not become law, this restriction is eliminated. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2511 be amended and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion? Senator Morris.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I made a note in my file in our DHS subcommittee with respect to the estimated savings that this bill might produce, and I wondered if there is any information that we have or if this is something that has been done. I see we have an appropriation of $18 million out of 50-30. But are there any efficiencies or savings expected? And if they are, do we have an estimate of what those might be?
Staff, you want to come up and help Senator Morris and where they at with that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, we don't have an estimate specifically of the savings generated from House Bill 2511. Again, the purpose of the bill was to establish clear definitions of which populations were eligible for the health plan, and they are not appreciably different from those that we cover today. However, the benefit packages that each group receives are somewhat different than they are today. Not for the categoricals, but they would be different for the medically needy group slightly. The program would be different from the one that was eliminated in 2001-03 and would cost less, frankly, than the one that was in 2001-03. And the standard population, the benefit packages are, again, not appreciably different from the way they are, but what must be covered is. Namely, the main switch here is that the standard population does not necessarily have to receive a hospital benefit, although that's being negotiated probably as we speak. But as far as efficiencies, this bill doesn't address those directly.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Yes, question, Representative Butler.
I had a question to staff. If there's a different population, I think, slightly different population in 5030, can you identify the differences? Because it appears that this covers a lesser population or a distinct population as what we will be voting on in 5030.
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, I don't think there is a difference between the people that are covered under 2511 and that which is and those who are funded in 5030. The medically needy program is funded in 5030
at the same level.
At $18 million of general fund, and that's what constrains this particular bill and the medically needy program.
But
that's
the same level of the FLP.
Yes, yes, it is.
Thank
sir.
You.
Thank you, staff. Further discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? House Bill 2511? Seeing none, then we'll pass House Bill 2511 out, be passed to the House with the dash 20 amendments. House Bill 3624, Dean Gross, Senator Gordley, thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3624, as amended, would modify several provisions of the Oregon Health Plan, including requiring participants to enroll in a managed care plan with certain exceptions, directing the Department of Human Services to contract with fully capitated health plans to provide administrative services for fee-for-service clients, contracting with a pharmacy benefit manager, and requiring the Health Services Commission to retain an actuary to determine benchmark rates for capitated health plan and fee-for-service providers, and appropriating $275,000 general fund for this provision. The bill also establishes a means for fully capitated health plans to pay hospitals for services in the event the two parties cannot agree on a contract. The measure precludes the Department of Human Services from establishing capitation rates that include payment for mental health drugs, and it prohibits the use of prior authorization except for clients whose prescription drug use exceeds 15 drugs in the preceding six-month period. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3624 be amended and be reported out to pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, we'll pass out House Bill 3624 as amended to the Senate. Do pass. With that, excellent work. We have a motion on the floor regarding Senate Bill 710. I guess I'd ask the carrier to withdraw at this time.
That is correct. Mr. Co-Chair, your subcommittee recommended Senate Bill 710 be amended and reported out due pass. As amended, I would like to withdraw that motion.
Thank you very much, sir. With that, we are adjourned. Thanks for the good work.